Eat Drink Indiana Radio is brought to you by Eskenazi Health, one of Central Indiana's leading providers of health care. Eat Drink Indiana Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndy.com, where Central Indiana turns to learn about food from farm to fork and drink from grains to glass.
You're listening to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD to The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Getzenberger. This week on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, we are going back into the kitchen for a Cook This segment with Chef Ryan Nelson of Late Harvest Kitchen and the North End Barbecue and Moonshine. And with the recent announcement from restaurateur Ed Rudisill and executive chef Carlos Salazar, co-owners at Rook, that restaurant will be moving to larger quarters later this year, it seemed like a good time to check in with both of them about how their menu is evolving. We'll also talk with Ed about the beauty of being a fan of social media. We'll also hear from Jeff McCabe about Brown County's Big Woods Brewing expanding into Speedway. And we're gearing up for the Hottest Kitchen Entrepreneur Challenge. Coming up June 24th, I'll be emceeing that event. And we'll talk with Scratch Truck owner Matt Kornmeyer about winning the challenge last year and what it takes to be a food entrepreneur. So stay with us for more here on WFYI and WFYI.org. This week here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, we head back into the kitchen for a Cook This segment. This time with Ryan Nelson, chef owner at Late Harvest Kitchen and the North End Barbecue and Moonshine in Indianapolis. But before I met Ryan at Late Harvest Kitchen, I stopped in at Kincaid's Meat Market to pick out something for the chef to cook. After considerable discussion with the butcher, we finally settled on a lamb top sirloin. And the butcher and I were both guessing it would end up as some sort of stew. But we were both wrong. I have to say, I don't cook lamb very much. You know, I like it. I enjoy it out. But I guess it's not anything that I ever think about.
I think lamb sometimes, like duck, has sort of a special occasion feel to it.
Right.
I also think, for me, it's a heartier meat. So it's something you typically have, like, fall or winter. Like, we do a lot of shanks
right.
in the wintertime. In fact, they're kind of a staple on the menu. I guess a little bit around Easter, too. Like, we'll do some legs and stuff like that.
Right. I guess I think of Easter, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Or maybe I think Moroccan food or something like that.
Well, I think let's go in that direction, maybe. I've got we have a vegetable tagine that we do on the menu here, and I have some of those spices in-house. And why don't we do, like, a lamb tartare with some North African spices and some bread and go from there.
Sure. Well, whatever you think.
All right, cool.
All right, so tell me what you're doing right now.
I am going to dice up this sirloin as small as I can. Hand-cut tartare. I feel like I'm cheating a little bit when it says cook this and I'm doing a raw dish, but...
Well, and, you know, it's all about inspiration and maybe looking at things in a different way.
I agree. That and I think that you're probably... cool with raw dishes, and yeah, not everybody is.
Oh, that is a good point. So maybe it wouldn't be something somebody would even consider.
Gotta cook for your audience.
Why would you go this route?
I think it just kind of sounded good.
So are you thinking as you go along, or do you get an idea? All at once, you know?
I kind of get an idea and then work towards it. Mm-hmm. And then if I need to change, you know, midstream, you know, go for it. You know, usually just seasoning, things like that. But this is, I really enjoy knife work. It's a great way to start the day. It's kind of...
Okay, so tell me where we are now in the process.
I've got all of my mise en place set, so that's kind of generally how I like to do things, is I like to have everything set up and then proceed rather than kind of cook as I go.
Do you do that at home? Do you even cook much at home?
I do on Sundays. That's the only day I take off. And my wife likes it when I cook, but she hates the mess because I'll sometimes literally just like do this and like forget that I'm not at work. And yeah. Also, I'll have like 10 different ramekins out with like different ingredients in it. She doesn't really like that either.
But it does make a difference when you're cooking, right, to have everything all ready. And I think that's one of the things at home that really helps, you know?
Much easier. Much more enjoyable. Especially, too, if you're entertaining. You know, you want to be a part of the party, too.
When you have tartare in France or over in Europe, like, they just put it through a grinder, and then they put it out on the plate. And it looks like ground beef. Like, it looks like hamburger.
Right, yeah, so there's...
Yeah. It can be off-putting.
Well, I wonder, you know, and if people would go for that.
Yeah.
You know, the there was another person at the butcher shop, you know, and the butcher's suggesting things. Oh, you know, how about elk or something like this? And I'm going, oh, you'd probably like that. You'd do that. And she's going, ooh, no, you know. And so I didn't know if some people are still off-put by that, really.
Kinda. They're lean, and I mean, like bison and stuff like that too. It's hard, I think, harder to get, you know, a lot of flavor out of stuff like that.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
This is nice lamb.
Do you have trouble getting people to try interesting things, or do they pretty much trust you now after all these years?
We still kind of play it safe and cook for the crowd. I mean, we could be more adventurous, but I think that you want people to be happy, and you know. So what might be adventurous for some is not for others. So we just try and do the best food we can at the business level that we operate at. So it's all about dishes for me are all about scalability. Sure. Like how great or how good can we make it at the speed or at the business level with which we're operating.
Right. So you're not necessarily cooking for you and your tastes, right?
Yes and no. I mean, you have to, you know, you got to play to everybody.
Right.
But you want to, you know, you want to be successful. So.
That's right. Right.
Yeah. There's certain, I think we've talked about this before, like how certain menus, how a menu has to have certain things. Like you have to have a couple fish, you have to have a chicken, you have to have a steak, you have to have this, you have to have that. And then by the end of those sort of things being fulfilled, you know, what's left or... You know, how many spots are left on the menu, you know, that you can play with.
So are there cuts that people should look at more that they don't look at? You know, things that, you know, people tend to fall into the right. You know, the pork chop, the chicken, the steak, the pasta or whatever. The things people should look at more often than they do?
I think that there's a lot of flavor in off cuts. You know, like we were talking before, like beef cheeks or pork cheeks or shin meat or tongue or all kinds of stuff.
But so maybe we're missing out?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think that's also one of the reasons why you go to restaurants.
Right.
You know?
Right. Because you're supposed to, you know, think about these things and show us the interesting stuff. I mean, some people go to restaurants for something interesting. Other people, you know, they want that steak, right?
Sure. Yeah, definitely.
So you have it finely minced, I guess? Yeah. Where do you go from there?
I want to cool it. I want to get really cold. And then we're going to prepare the rest of our ingredients that we're going to mix it with and garnish it with.
The herbs smell great. So
yeah,
tell me what you got.
Super aromatic. I've got cilantro, curly leaf parsley, and some basil, which is really, really nice.
And you grow this at the restaurant, some of this, right?
We do. We try and not pay for herbs in the summer months. Plus, it's nice to, you know, walk out there and, you know, it smells wonderful. I think parsley is the most underrated herb.
How so?
I mean, for years and years and years, there was just like a sprig of it on a plate, and that's all it was used. But I think it's fantastic with eggs or in salads or raw. I just love parsley.
What is that?
It's like a Tunisian or North African version of chimichurri. So we've got all kinds of spices in here. Coriander, cinnamon, sugar... a lot of parsley, some cilantro, a little bit of chili, some argan oil, which I see on my wife's like moisturizers and shampoos. It's kind of funny. It's like, oh, we cook with that, but it's like North African chimichurri, like a condiment.
Charmelot.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that'll go great with the lamb. and I've got some apricot chutney that we do a vegetable tagine here. And it's just dried apricots, some herbs, a little bit of sugar, a little bit of onion, nice sweetness. So we'll do just a tiny bit of that, too.
Okay, so tell me what you're doing.
I just toasted off a little bit of brioche, some brioche that we make here in-house. And I let the tartare marinate for a bit just to kind of let the flavors come together. And now I'm going to plate it and kind of bring everything together just at the end. And then I like to use the egg. That's kind of classic to have the chopped egg or the hard-cooked egg with beef tartare. Some people put a raw yolk on or do it that way. I like to just use just the cooked eggs.
I think this is just interesting, maybe on the side. Maybe put it on the toast and then maybe add...
That's the apricots, right?
That's that chutney, that apricot chutney, which I think... like a little marmalade, and then the tartare. It could go nice together. Church it up a little bit with the... make it look nice and pretty.
Voila.
Describe it for me all together.
Okay, we took a lamb sirloin and hand-chopped it up very fine, cooled it down, and then added some shallots, some garlic, a little bit of radish. I had some charmoula, which is like a North African chimichurri, if you will. We've got some hard-cooked eggs as a garnish, some fresh herbs from the garden, a little bit of apricot chutney, and then I've got some brioche soldiers, if you will, for the vehicle.
And this is something somebody could do at home, and it didn't take all that long, but it's knowing what goes together and what flavors are going to work, right?
Correct. Lamb and North African flavors go really well together.
We've been in the kitchen with Chef Ryan Nelson, owner of Late Harvest Kitchen and the North End Barbecue and Moonshine. For more information on Ryan's restaurants, go to lateharvestkitchen.com. and thenorthendbbq.com. When Rook opened just about 2 years ago at 719 Virginia Avenue with a small menu of banh mi sandwiches, it certainly found an audience eager to try those traditional Vietnamese sandwiches. But when Chef Carlos Salazar came on as executive chef later that summer, the menu began to grow to include other Asian-inspired menu items, including some traditional Filipino dishes. And now Ed and Carlos have announced that Rook will be moving later this year to a larger space 2 blocks to the north. So it seemed like a good time to hear their thoughts on how the menu has expanded over the last couple of years and what has been the reaction.
Since we opened, you know, we've talked about doing a Filipino-heavy menu or adding a lot more Filipino items on, but, you know, again, not seeing ourselves as a Filipino restaurant, things like that, and being able for Carlos to be able to present flavors that maybe not traditionally served in the Philippines, or flavors and like inspiration from other parts of Asia. We really wanted to do it, but we held ourselves back for what, a good year probably.
Yeah.
And we both said that, I think he first said it and I echoed it, that like when we rolled out the first menu that had a lot of Filipino dishes on it, we're like, if this menu fails, we're going to be devastated, because this is the one that we really, really wanted to work. You're like, because it's the food that we're curious about, we're interested in. It didn't take but a week probably before everybody was just kind of like flooding in to come check it out. You know, even some of our like, I don't necessarily want to say demographics, but we started pulling in a different clientele, like that were all of a sudden that were accustomed to eating Filipino cuisine or Filipino people coming in, and you know, he's got a different twist on it. He's got a fine dining background, and so, you know, as he said, you know, the street food anywhere you go isn't pretty. It's, you know, it's fast, it's easy, it's on the streets, it's, you know, they got a little booth and they're making one item, but having a guy like Carlos putting this together, I mean, the plates look amazingly beautiful, and the flavors are spot on.
So, tell me about the new menu.
Well, new menu is not as good and cold outside. I kind of went ramen heavy. I guess, I don't know if it's heavy, but I got 5 different kinds of ramen in there. So, I went 2 vegetarians, which is a red curry. The other one is a mushroom base. And then I went with a chicken base, almost, it's a Filipino dish, but it's literally the flavor is chicken and onions. And then I have tonkatsu, which is pork bones, chicken bones with lots of fat, and boiled the crap out of it until it's creamy. And then the pho, which I went totally not tradition. People might get be mad at me, whatever, but it's a ramen. It's ramen. It's pho, but the broth is pho, but everything else is ramen. So,
why ramen? Why now? I mean, I know you usually have some on the menu, but why expand the menu?
I've always wanted to do it. I didn't know if people were ready for it. I didn't know if it was... I hear a lot of people talk about it, but I've had ramens on there and no one orders it. You know, so it's just like, well, people are talking, but they're not backing it up. So really, I'm testing the grounds. I put 5. I think it's safe. And I think for my space back there, that's really all I can do. And it's cold. I mean, it's perfect time for it.
So now describe them a little bit more for people who might not be familiar with it. You know, we do hear a lot about ramen, but I'm wondering maybe if people have tried it. So what's it like?
It's really, really good broth with really nice noodles. Now, well, it's a Japanese dish. I mean, they eat it for breakfast, lunch, dinner. And, I mean, it's noodles and broth. I mean, what we grew up eating was the 25-cent ramen. So it's that, but 50 times better.
See, that's what I was thinking, is that people are thinking of the packs in the grocery stores, you know.
We're actually using real bones, real meat, real vegetables, water, you know, and fresh noodles coming from Japan, and we're actually taking 5, 6 to 24 hours making the broth instead of a minute, you know, and putting it's powder packets.
Right,
know?
So there's no packets of flavoring going on. Yeah. This is not the kind of ramen we're talking about.
Yeah. The people here would probably like it too because it kind of reminds me of chicken noodle soup. So, I mean, even my cooks back there, Shelva and Pete, they're like, this is like eating chicken noodles, and I think it's going to be a big hit. And plus, instead of just regular braised chicken, I'm putting fried chicken on there. So it's just a different take. You know.
I think that's great. So I think that gives people a little idea of you know, a little bit of common ground, you know, from that they can, you know, can kind of approach it from.
Yeah.
You know, anything else you know that people might not expect from the new menu?
Well, half of it, I want to say half. I got the 5 ramen, and then I got the other half, almost like Filipino menu, where I want to focus on, you know, because I think people are loving it. I mean, it blew up once I started putting Filipino menu items on the menu, and people are taking it. You know, it's not what I expected.
Well, how come? Why do you think that is?
Because no one talks about it. I don't think there's no Filipino restaurants, and you might go to Chicago or whatever, New York, they'll have it, but Indy, not really. And Filipino food is not pretty. You know, it's really not pretty. It's fried fish, fried pork, rice. But it takes creativity to make it pretty for people to approach it a little bit better than this looks like, you know, rice and meat on my plate. So,
So when you talk about Filipino street food, you know, what kind of items are you talking about? Because, you know, our idea of street food is probably different from another person's idea of street food. So what do you mean by that?
Street foods in the Philippines, traditionally it's a lot of meat and a stick, a lot of like fried whole baby chickens, you know, like fried fish, dried shrimp, things like that. Like, and meat on the stick, I'm talking about they're using intestines, they're using pig ears, they're using every part of the meat or the beef, the pig, the fish, whatever, and they're skewering it and grilling it, and you eat it. But here, I mean, I'm kind of taking the approach of people not being too scared. I serve pigtails, you know. I've served just different, the whole fish, you know, things like that where, I don't know, it's just, like I said, people have taken it a lot better than I expected.
So they're open to trying stuff like that?
They are, and I'm really happy because when I was talking with Ed, 3-4 years ago, it's like, Indy's not ready for it. And then when we got together, it was like, it's almost like perfect timing. It was like it was getting to that point 2 years later, 3 years later. All right, Indy's ready for it. Let's see what you got and what they can take.
We've been talking with Ed Rudisill and Carlos Salazar of Rook in Indianapolis.
For more information on the Virginia Avenue restaurant, go to rookindy.com. Eat Drink Indiana Radio is made possible with support from Eskenazi Health, providing care to nearly 1 million outpatient visitors each year with the mission to advocate, care, teach, and serve at its hospital and inpatient facility and 11 community health centers located throughout Indianapolis. EskenaziHealth.edu. Well, we have talked this week with restaurateur Ed Rudisill, co-owner of Rook in Indianapolis, but Ed is also an owner at Black Market, Siam Square, and Thunderbird. He's certainly busy, but he also makes time to stay in touch or to reach out to people on social media. And he has made connections that way with people all over the country, even around the world. After we talked about the menu at Rook with Ed and Rook's executive chef, Carlos Salazar, Ed and I also talked about how he's used social media to make connections all over the food business.
Well, I think I'm relatively outgoing, depending on my day. You know, sometimes I can't say relatively. I know I'm very outgoing. But, you know, whenever I go out of town, I try to, like, locate usually, like, one good place to as a jumping off point. And then if I really love the place, I'll ask the bartenders and servers where else do I need to go in town. But almost always in this day of, like, social media, we'll trade either Facebook, Twitter, whatever, and then I try to stay in contact with everybody because it's fun, it's interesting, and it makes a revisit to those places really interesting. You know, we were talking earlier about the ramen. You know, I ate at a wonderful ramen joint in D.C. in the spring. It was kind of a last-minute trip. We went there for the cherry blossoms, you know, around the National Mall. I wanted to eat. A lady I know named Wendy Tin that writes the Upstart Kitchen blog. She's amazing. She's a great writer. I think she's a lawyer for the Justice Department or something. She has some, like, totally non-food related job. But she had sent me an email and said, "Hey, I saw you're going to be in D.C. We should link up." I'm like, "Okay, great. Let's do that." And then we found out that she wasn't in town for, like, two more days. It was a quick trip for us. But she gave me a list of places, and so we hit Daikaya. Which they were doing a very different style of ramen, like a Sapporo style. Yeah, I mean, anytime I go into any city, anytime I get chatting with somebody, like, I try to maintain that connection because it's fun and, you know, you've got different perspectives in the industry from depending on what their job function is or what city they're in, and just because every city is so different in the way that the restaurant industry runs. And so, I mean, you know, lately I've been really obsessed with Seattle. But my wife always teases me, like, because everywhere I go,
right,
like, I still stay in contact with literally the very first person I met in Sicily. When we ate at a dinner, we had been in town for 3 hours, went to dinner. The somm at the restaurant was wonderful. She and I got along really well. We still stay in contact. She has since moved to Paris. And so she kind of fills me in on what's going on in Paris and, you know, things like that. But no, we still probably talk on a monthly basis, maybe once a month or so.
Well, now tell me about Michaela Hayes and how you connected with her and got her to Indianapolis for a workshop.
The first time I read about her was in the New York Times when there was an article about Gramercy Tavern and Mike Anthony creating the pickling station for her. And then gave her, I think she had 4 or 5 staff members underneath her, and that's all they did was, like, fermentation, pickling, all that. That was how I got led to her blog. When we were opening Black Market, there was things that we wanted to do. We knew that the pickling program was going to be pretty serious, and at that time I was really interested. I had found her blog, and I was really interested in nukazuke pickling, which is kind of pickling vegetables in rice bran, using that as the medium, so you kind of bury everything in this. It feels like sand, you know, you just kind of bury it, and you create this, like, yeast culture inside, and then pack everything in and just let it ferment. She had a post about it, but it was very brief, and I said, I need to know this lady. Like, what she's doing is amazing. There's only a handful of places that were operating at that level as far as, like, the fermentation level. And, I mean, I reached out to the Culture Pickle Shop as well in Berkeley. I never really heard anything back from them, but Michaela, I left a post or a comment on one of her posts saying I would love to get in contact with Michaela. And she responded via email and, you know, asked what kind of questions I had, and I told her. And then we just kind of started a conversation going back and forth, and like, oh, we're, you know, Micah, Frank, and I are opening a new restaurant in Indianapolis, and, you know, we're really interested in some of these techniques. And we just always had it out there, like, you know, she's just super nice. You, I believe you met her, right? And so, you know, she was always asking, like, how's it going? How's the build-out going? Whatever. And we just always, again, we would talk about once a month or email back and forth. And after about a year of Black Market being open, we just kind of said, one of these days we should do, an event together, you know?
So these connections that you make through the internet and things you read and different blogs or articles in the paper, it really, you know, it continues to have an effect, you know, on what you're doing here.
Well, I think that the food community is very, well, it's very tight anyway. I mean, it may seem like, how could you possibly know everybody, because there's just, you know, millions of restaurants across the country, but it really is kind of a small community, and everybody, it's the 6 degrees of separation. Somebody knows somebody that knows somebody, and everybody is pretty welcoming. You know, I've never, I just can't imagine 30 years ago, like, you know, you, here's a perfect example. So when we were developing our sour sausage recipe, I am familiar with the way that they make it in Northern Thailand. But in Northern Thailand, you would take, you know, sausages filled with raw pork, and you would, like, and your ingredients, and you would stuff the sausages and leave them outside for, like, 4 days to ferment. Obviously, we can't do that in the United States. I mean, the health department regulates. I mean, it's just unfathomable. You couldn't do it. But I know of restaurants that have done that, so I reached out to some people that I had been networked with, and some not even so, like, unsolicited email kind of thing. Like, I sent a message over to Andy Ricker at Pock Pock, and I said, I know you serve this on your menu. How do you do it? You know, how do you get around these things? And, like, he responded back to me immediately, and you just couldn't have done that 30 years ago. You would have to, like, hand write a note, send it off. Maybe in 3 or 4 months you might have gotten a response back. Maybe not. You know, I talked to a couple of the cooks at Next in Chicago, because their second menu they did at Next was a Thai menu. And Chef Dave Barron had sent out some nem sausage and nem prik for us to try. And so I knew that they had done it before as well. And again, through some mutual connections, I know a couple of guys that had worked there. So we actually got the Next recipe. They sent us the recipe of how they did their sausage. Now, we did end up, like, using more in line with the way that, at least ingredient-wise and preparation-wise, with the people that work on our team, you know, from Siam Square that are from that area, employing that, but also on that other side, like, the more modern preparations as far as not hanging it outside, you know, to cure. But, you know, those things work. And so being able to reach out to a network like that, you just couldn't have done that prior to social media.
We've been talking with Indianapolis restaurateur Ed Rudisill of Rook, Black Market, Siam Square, and Thunderbird. Stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Well, we heard earlier in this show from owners at Rook, which is expanding with a new larger restaurant on Virginia Avenue later this year. But now we head to Speedway, which is seeing lots of development on Main Street. Brown County's Big Woods Brewing will be building a restaurant and beer garden at the corner of 10th and Main Streets in Speedway. And Big Woods Jeff McCabe fills us in on a few details. First of all, tell me the Big Woods story, sort of the progression of Big Woods.
Sure. Well, we started about 6 years ago. And what the whole beginning for this was to we bought this little restaurant in Nashville that was originally the Brown Jug, just a little, you know, they made pies and that kind of stuff, just a tiny little place. It had been closed for a couple of years. Then we thought, well, okay, we bought a restaurant. What do we do with it? And it was Tim O'Brien, who is my son-in-law, who was doing some great brewing down the street at our bed and breakfast. And we thought, well, Tim's making this great beer. Why don't we have a microbrewery.
Why don't we start a microbrewery? Yeah, that was it.
That was it. So that's how we started. And we were really surprised. We waited till after the busy season, or at least we thought we did. You know, so we opened up in November, and still the first day we were really busy. We ran out of beer after 3 days the first week, and we recovered quickly. But we went from brewing. We would close the restaurant on Sunday nights, and we would brew from Sunday to Wednesday. And then we would open up again on Wednesday. So if you can imagine breaking down a kitchen on Sunday night and then, you know, brewing like crazy, you know, around the clock and then opening back up, that's kind of how we started. So we quickly moved on to, you know, we built bigger and bigger systems, and still we didn't have enough room for all the folks who wanted to see us. So we bought the building across the street.
Oh, no, that's right. Now people might remember that, you know, when you expanded, right? When was that?
That was 3 years ago, that's when we built the Big Woods Pizza Company, which, you know.
Now, that's taken off very well, too, right?
Oh, it's great. It's who knew, right? We have a great time. We do artisan pizzas there, right? We start from scratch. We make the dough. The ingredients are all fresh. You can build your own pizza or have one of our signature pizzas. So that's a lot of fun, and people gravitated to it. In both places, the original Bigwood Brewing Company and at the pizza company, which, like I said, is not very far apart. You know, we do a lot of entertaining, too. We have a lot of live music and that kind of stuff because we're blessed to be in Brown County where you've got all those great musicians and that kind of stuff. So we kind of think of it as a whole experience. We call that Bigwoods Village now. And, of course, upstairs in that big building, we've got still got the four-barrel system that really carried us for a few years. And we do all our specialty and feature beers there now. So up the road, we built a bigger brewery in an old bowling alley, which is great because we're all big Lebowski fans, right? So what better than...
It fits, right?
Yeah. Why not build a brewery inside an old bowling alley with good karma and that kind of stuff? And that's worked out really well for us. And as we've gone along, people like Mark Havens, who's our head brewer there, and like Jim Dunbar, who's sitting with us here today, joined in with us. And it was last year that we built the place in Bloomington. And that actually was an old, it was a restaurant that was pretty well known in town, Cafe Django.
Right. Now, how did that go?
Well, I went great. I mean, what happened was Cafe Django was the first place to put our beer on tap in Bloomington.
Oh, that's nice. So it's kind of a natural progression there.
Yeah. And so the owners called us up one day and said, hey, we're, you know, we're going to go do something different. We're going to move and, you know, would you like to buy our business? And so we took about 8 hours to think about it, and we did that. And, you know, then pretty quickly we started to work on that building, and we built this 35-foot bar that kind of snakes around the building and that kind of thing. And we came up with a concept there for kind of a tap room where we're a microbrewery, craft brewer. We make our own beer, but we feature other beers too. So 24 taps, 8 of them are ours. The other 16 are our favorite other beers. So it's just, you know, if you want to try one of our beers like Hair Trigger or the IPA and match it up kind of with Green Flash from San Diego or Bell's or whoever, you know, it's just this great place for people who really love craft beer and really want to compare things and contrast them and that kind of stuff. And that's where we started the Blind Flight Challenge.
Now tell me about that.
Okay, so the Blind Flight Challenge is just, the idea was that a lot of people think they know a lot about beer. There are different ways to educate people about beer, but one great way to do it is to kind of set a baseline for them. So everything changes when you put a blindfold on people.
I bet that's fun.
Well, their senses, right? So just a great way to get people to kind of level set them about the beer and then talk about it. And we actually have kind of different levels. You know, we're old aviators, right? So we have just like your basic, you know, solo kind of thing. Once you get the first level and you can identify beers after you already saw them and tasted them, put the blindfold on, can you figure out which one's which, to where we're actually comparing beers within a style and that kind of stuff. And, you know, eventually you could be a master.
So people can come and do that?
Oh, yeah. 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 And so we do it at all our places now, but that's the kind of thing. In Bloomington, you can have a lot of fun with the menu, right? Because you've got a very diverse population, people from all over. They're willing to experiment. And, you know, so each of the places kind of has some of their own unique things. And our idea is that we're going to bring all of those to Speedway.
Well, now tell me what the vision is for the Speedway facility, the restaurant. Are you going to be brewing here? Tell me a little about what it is.
Right now, we're not going to be brewing here. We'll see if that fits. But we've got a couple of other priorities. For folks who have been to Nashville, they know that we built this beautiful timber frame in front of the original place, and the new place on 10th and Main here in Speedway will feature another timber frame, but scaled up from that. So we're talking about a 7,500 square foot restaurant.
Wow, that's very big.
Yeah, and an even bigger beer garden, because if you think about Speedway and you think about the events that happen here and the number of people that come in, we're going to take what we've learned from being in a tourist town in Nashville, you know, about spooling up and spooling down for how many people are in town, right? So that's kind of the idea that we'll have this place that will remind you of our other places, kind of have the best of all of them, and just have this great place for outdoor entertaining, right? And to take advantage of, you know, a place for all those folks who come in for these great events.
Wow. So I think it'll be kind of interesting to see a big timber frame structure right there on the corner.
Yeah, it'll be a departure in a way from the other buildings on Main Street. But if you take a look at what everybody's doing, something interesting, right? Delara's got a very interesting building. Part of the reason we love Speedway is because it's not like any place else, right? Main Street on Speedway is not your typical Main Street, right? You've got race car teams, you've got a brewery, you've got all kinds of things. Winery now, you know, A.J. Foyt's Winery. So all this cool stuff, and we get to be right there at the corner of 10th and Main and be part of the experience.
Now, you are going in very close to another brewery, so tell me about that. Do you feel it's going to be complimentary?
Oh, I really do. First of all, we think they make great beer. And we've followed them as they've kind of made progress coming from Shelbyville to here and that kind of thing.
Now that's Daredevil Brewery, which will be kind of catty cornered across the street, right?
Right. So we think it's great. I really can imagine that we'll have their beer on tap at our place, because like I said, we'll bring that concept that's worked so well in Bloomington, where we've got our beer, and then we've got a bunch of other great craft beers, and really give beer lovers a chance to, choose for themselves. So it's a lot of fun. I think it'd be great for Daredevil, great for us, and if we could get a couple more breweries here at Speedway, I think that'd be great too.
Now tell me about the food. What can we expect as far as that goes?
Okay, so we do a lot of smoking, right? We smoke about 600 pounds of pork a week in Nashville, and some more on top of that in Bloomington. So we'll bring a big smoker, of course, and those famous pulled pork nachos and other things we do with pulled pork. In fact, our pulled pork pizzas.
Now, I have had the pulled pork nachos, and those are really, that's something special, right?
Yeah, they're fun, right? They're not like anybody else's. And so they'll be here for sure. So some of those signature dishes, like I said, the pizzas will be like the ones from Big Woods Pizza Company. In Bloomington, we do some other interesting things, more shared plate kind of stuff, and we can do some more kind of exotic dishes there. So, we'll have a lot of fun specials and that kind of stuff. But we'll take the best of everything we've done and bring it here. And, with all the different people that come to Speedway, I think it'll be great.
Now, tell me about, you mentioned the beer garden. Tell me what that will involve.
Well, what we're thinking, it's got to be in a closed space there, and it'll be, as far as I know, it'll be one of the biggest beer gardens in Indiana, if not regionally. And we'll build it so that as the crowds come in, we can increase the space that we're using. And we'll have some things for people to do. We'll have a great outdoor kind of menu for them, plenty of great craft beer and that kind of stuff, and an entertainment venue, so that if they're not getting enough entertainment from the other things that are here at Speedway, they can enjoy some great live music or whatever in the beer garden.
We've been talking with Jeff McCabe of Big Woods Brewing and Quaffon. For more information on the expansion of Big Woods, go to quaffon.com or keep up with them on Facebook. Eat, Drink Indiana Radio is made possible with support from Eskenazi Health. With its 315-bed hospital and inpatient facilities and 11 community health centers located throughout Indianapolis,
eskenazihealth.edu. So I talk to so many creative food entrepreneurs here in Indianapolis that sometimes I've got to wonder, who has the idea that's going to hit it big? Well, if you'd like to get a look at some creative local entrepreneurs who just might be the one, then you'll want to check out the Hottest Kitchen Entrepreneur Challenge that's coming up June 24th at Ivy Tech's Culinary Facility at 2820 North Meridian Street. It runs from noon to 3 p.m. and it's free to attend. I'll be there to MC the event that includes finalists in both the startup and early stage business categories, along with established local food entrepreneurs to serve as judges. It's a little like Shark Tank, but nicer. I talked recently with one of last year's winners, Matt Kornmeyer of Scratch Truck, about the Hottest Kitchen Entrepreneur Challenge. So tell me a little bit about the process of the Hottest Entrepreneur Challenge.
Well, it started out, we just filled out the paperwork. So we got signed up for it, went down the path, and didn't really think much about it after the paperwork. And then they had contacted us and said that we had been accepted or actually were a finalist. So got a little excited about that, started looking more at... you know, saw who the judges were, went and did the show, so to say, and really had a good time. The thing I took the most out of it was the feedback from, you know, at the time I didn't even look at them as peers. It was just like, oh, I'm the little guy over here. But now, you know, after the feedback, they gave me the confidence to feel that, you know, this was a product that, you know, they were behind, they had confidence in, and that helped build my confidence in, yes, this is something we can do, we can get it to market.
Well, now, tell me a little bit about the product, about the bacon marmalade, right?
Bacon marmalade is a thing that we started, it's the signature item on our burger, it kind of makes our burger. It's basically a kind of a bacon jam-ish. We take bacon, onions, brown sugar, Tabasco, black coffee, and kind of cook that down for a while, and it basically kind of makes a jam or a marmalade type of consistency, and we'll spread that on our burger with gorgonzola and arugula. It gives it that sweet, smoky flavor, which pairs well with the pungency of the gorgonzola and the pepper of the arugula. A lot of people started asking, hey, do you sell this? You know, some people would say, can you sell it in a 50-gallon drum to me? I'll take it intravenously. So that kind of got the idea going. So we did a couple test cans, and we were selling it on the truck. And then when the contest came around and the feedback we got, we went ahead and started to try to ramp up production. We started selling it at Homespun, a couple of the wine and cheese stores. And we thought things were going well, and then we realized that we kind of stumbled a little bit and didn't follow all the rules that we needed to with production, on the production side.
Well, tell me a little bit about what the reaction was from the judging panel.
They overwhelmingly enjoyed the product, said it was very good. They liked the packaging. I think that's one thing that, looking back hindsight at some of the other people that were in the contest, I don't think they had the branding or the packaging. It was just an idea of food product, where we were one of the few that came to the event with, you know, we here's how it's packaged, here's what the costs are, here's what, you know, we had a business model set up for the product, where I think some of the other people had just the product. And that would be advice to somebody going into it. Kind of those are some of the questions they are going to ask, is, you know, cost or just simple business things. Just have an idea of how to answer those questions. But the feedback was that they really enjoyed the product. And, you know, one of the judges said, maybe I should think about selling the truck and just focusing on the marmalade. It hit a lot of hot buttons. It was local. It had bacon. It had, you know, a lot of buzz things going on about it. So after hearing that feedback, like I said, we were very excited about it and looked forward to moving forward with it. We still plan on doing that. We just have to retool things and kind of get our ducks in a row before we relaunch the product.
So then tell me about some of the stumbling blocks that you hit along the way.
The first one, the biggest one, was that we did not go through the proper channels when it came to getting licensed for it. We just kind of assumed, hey, we're going to start drawing this, go ahead and make it, get it out there and start selling it, which is fine, but I guess the science got in the way where we were pressure canning the product. We have to be licensed to do that. So now as we drilled down further and further into the licensing process, we saw that there's a lot of governing bodies involved. We didn't have our ducks in a row. So we kind of had to shut down and kind of retool, reevaluate. high pressure canning is a challenge for a small business. So we're going to have to look at going another way, which is either co-packing, which is a financial burden at this juncture, or change the formula to try to get it be able to fall into another category of product. So that's where we're at right now. We've been working with Purdue, trying to get some testing done to make sure that we can fall in that category and get back on. It has enlightened me, though, that there are other products that we have in our line that we wanted to bring out later down the road that we may bring out now because we know that we can get those through the process easier. Kool-Aid jalapenos, we sell a lot of those, and we figured we could probably jar that, so that's our next thing we're going to attempt. So you should hopefully see that soon.
Well, tell me a little bit more about those.
Kool-Aid jalapenos is, I read an article, and I saw in the South that they do Kool-Aid pickles. So they'll take dill pickles and pour out the liquid and basically soak them in Kool-Aid. And I was like, oh, that's cool. So I did some at home and actually enjoyed it. It was a different taste. It was a sweet, kind of salty taste. And I was like, I'm a big fan of the sweet, sweet hot kind of thing. So I was like, let me try this with jalapenos. So I dumped out the pickling liquid and poured in Kool-Aid, fruit punch Kool-Aid, and let it soak for a couple days. And tried it. I was like, holy crap, this is good. So we threw it on the truck, and people enjoyed it too. And we sell, you know, quite a bit of it. It's only 50 cents. So it's just it's something that adds. It goes good on the burger. It goes great with barbecue. And we, you know, probably go through a gallon of jalapenos a month. So we figured let's try it out and see if people like it. It's it's probably somewhat of a novelty, but at the same time, it really does taste good if you like the sweet, hot kind of thing.
But now tell me, kind of catch me up a little bit about the truck and the progress and how long it's been and how it's gone.
This June will be our fourth year in business. We were one of the first trucks. We're the ninth truck in the city. You know, the food truck scene has exploded since then. I think there's, at any given moment, probably 65, 70 trucks licensed in the city. Food truck business has been good. You know, we've initially started with the business plan was just build the brand. The first 5 years, build the brand. We've had some opportunities for growth, but I wanted to just stay true to the business plan and continue to build the brand. I've seen others, not only in this market, but in other markets, try to grow too quick, and they weren't ready for that, and they collapsed under their own weight. So we're kind of at that point that we're ready to expand. We were looking at brick-and-mortar options. The funding was kind of a challenge, so we're going to put that away for now and revisit that at another time. Probably next year we'll revisit it. But food truck business itself, you know, we've got a lot of exposure that's been very helpful. We're on each street. You know, we've been in Indy Monthly, Nuvo, best food truck in the city. So that's really helped us out, the organic growth of the business. You know, each year our, you know, daily averages have gone up. Our headcount has gone up of who we've served. You know, private events, special events. We actually, you know, probably at certain times of the year could use a second or third truck. We're just saying no more than we're saying yes, which, you know, is frustrating. But at the same time, we have to control what we do and not get crazy and expand too quickly. It is a tough job, though. It is a grind. Food trucking is a hard job. People always say, oh, I'd love to do that. I saw it on TV once, and that looks fun. It is fun, but it's hard.
You know, people have probably seen the movie Chef. Tell me a little bit more about the reality of it.
Well, the chef, it's funny. Everyone asks me, as a food truck owner, I have never seen a movie about a food truck owner. I haven't I've seen it yet. I need to see it. I just don't have time. It is a hard year. You know, your typical day starts 6:45, 7 o'clock. You're starting your social media. You know, you're usually at the truck by 8, starting to get things ready. You know, you're out on the road by 10 o'clock going to your location. You get there. You set up. You serve for a couple hours. Then you shut down, you clean everything, you go back to your commissary. It's basically, if my eyes are open, I'm working. It's 7 days a week. You know, you shop on Sunday, you prep on Monday, you're back out at it on Tuesday. It is a grind. It's a hard work, but it's so rewarding and fulfilling that, you know, for this right individual, it's the best thing in the world. But if you think it's going to be an easy job, just like the movie, no, you're...
Well, tell me what it's like. You know, you've talked about what it's like to look out and see people waiting in line for a while for your food. That must be cool.
It is. I still don't understand why sometimes I shake my head, but I have a hard time standing in line for anything. But it is rewarding to see that. And then even after standing 25 minutes in line, they'll come back and say, dude, that was an awesome burger or whatever. And that's what it's all about for us. We had one guy at one of the office parks. He was probably a good 800 to 1,000 yards away from the truck, stood in line, got his lunch, went back to his building, came back about an hour later and just personally wanted to tell us that was the best hamburger he ever had. And that was it. And then he walked away. But it just, makes you feel warm inside. That's part of what drives me, and I think every food truck owner at the end of the day or every restaurateur is that's what they're there for. There's something ingrained in them that's what motivates them. It's just to make people happy with the food that you put on the plate.
We've been talking with Matt Kornmeyer of Scratch Truck about the upcoming Hottest Kitchen Entrepreneur Challenge. To register to attend the free event, which is sponsored by Reliable Water Services, go to hotwater247.com. You've been listening to Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. Thanks so much for tuning in this week, and thanks also to our guests, Chef Ryan Nelson of Late Harvest Kitchen and the North End Barbecue Moonshine, restaurateur Ed Rudisill and executive chef Carlos Salazar, co-owners at Rook, Jeff McCabe of Big Woods Brewing, and Matt Kornmeyer, owner and operator of Scratch Truck. And thanks also to producer John Ketzenberger for helping to bring you Eat Drink Indiana Radio.
Eat Drink Indiana Radio is brought to you by Eskenazi Health, one of Central Indiana's leading providers of health care. Eat Drink Indiana Radio is powered by EatDrinkIndy.com, where Central Indiana turns to learn about food from farm to fork and drink from grains to glass.